You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 820 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Okay, you've been listening to Lead Me, Guide Me, and that's probably the appropriate message for today's show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. You are tuned in to AM 820 Radio, the Catholic Conference Radio Hour, and today we're going to be talking about, as we do once a month on this show, public policy issues from a Catholic perspective, issues that affect us in Springfield, Illinois. And with us today, we're going to be taking some time just to have a bit of a conversation here at 9:03 a.m. in Chicago about what's been going on in Springfield, Illinois, with regards to the state capitol and the General Assembly's inability to come to some major public policy decisions. And on the line with us today, we're going to have one of the associate directors for the Catholic Conference who lives in Springfield and has been following this probably way too closely for this time of the year on August 20th, which is usually a time when we have the ability to start planning for the next year and to try to get out some reports about what happened in the following year. But this year, that didn't quite happen. We're still going strong in Springfield. And on the line with us, we have Zach Wickman. Zach, are you on the line?
I am here.
Good morning. How are things in Springfield?
Oh, they're pretty quiet right now, so can't complain.
Well, it's a hot, sticky morning up here, as attested to the cab that I just got out of, which is even stickier and hotter than everything I've experienced in Springfield. This morning, Chicago Tribune, as I was reading coming in, has another story about the General Assembly and about the governor, about pay raises. And I guess what we want to do this morning is take some time to talk a little bit about what is it about this year's legislative process that has resulted in August 20th still being a date when the General Assembly is not yet adjourned. And why is it that they have not been able to come to consensus about major public policy issues? Is there something in our society today that's changed? Is there something in the public discourse that is preventing public policymakers from making decisions? And why is it that we have one party in the state of Illinois that has the majority in the House, it has the majority in the Senate, and has the governor's office, and it seems to be as fractured and polarized as any system that would have two competing parties or many other parties? We would like your phone calls this morning and your contributions to our conversation. And the phone number here is area code 312-751-1979. And we're talking about a number of issues this morning. We're talking about Governor Blagojevich and his actions. We're talking about how public policy decisions are made in Springfield at the state level. And we also want to talk a little bit about the Catholic Conference agenda and some of the accomplishments that we have tentatively achieved at this point in time with regard to education funding, etc. So with that said, maybe what we should do is just start out by trying to define where we are in the process. Zach, we tentatively have a budget or we don't have a budget?
Well, I think we are going to have a budget. The question is what's going to be in it. The legislative leaders agreed to an operating budget to fund the state government through next July, or actually next June, July 1st of 2008. They had an agreement to pass that budget, to send it to the governor, and then to override any vetoes he may have imposed on the budget. Now, since then, there's been a change, and the Senate president has decided he's not going to override any vetoes. So what we're expecting sometime, I think early this week, is for the governor to announce roughly $500 million in vetoes. He has a line item veto authority, meaning he can cut whatever he wants from the budget. And that when he does that, the House will come in and override the vetoes, but the Senate will not. So the vetoes will stand. So the question, you know, everybody's waiting to find out is what is it he's going to cut out of the budget? $500 million is a lot of money. You know, he had this big press conference that it was all going to be pork. Well, at best, there's $200 million of what people would define pork in the budget. So that leaves $300 million, and where is that going to come from? Well, it's going to come from different programs, different departments, and everyone wants to know what that's going to be.
What's different about this year than has been different than other past years? It's now August 20th. The General Assembly still is not technically done with its work. Generally, they're able to accomplish passage of a state budget and to address the issues that they need to address by the end of May, which is generally when they get out. Yet this year, it seems to have taken an exceptionally long period of time, and it's still going, and the consensus in Springfield is that it'll probably just continue on and morph into the veto session. What's different this year than about past years?
Well, I think there's a lot of different levels that you can answer that question on. I mean, ostensibly, it's about health care. The governor wants this universal health care program. He hasn't thought of an acceptable way to pay for it, at least in the eyes of the legislature. But, you know, then you have, I think, the cynic and the mainstream media's viewpoint that this is all about ego. This is the governor against Speaker Madigan. But, you know, I think, and I think you think the same way, we've had this conversation before, that this is more about the future direction of the Democratic Party and what are the core values of the Democratic Party. I think the new, you know, if you want to call the Blagojevich camp the new Democrats, I mean, they're people, I think, who view certain things, or most things, as God-given rights, that is, health care, housing, job, all these things that everyone is entitled to, and if they don't get it, then the government steps in and provides it. Where I think some old-school Democrats might, you know, have some issue with that. Not that they don't value those things.
It's how do we get there?
But, right, how do we get there, and should the government provide it no matter the cost?
Difficult public policy questions, and I think that's one of the main reasons why we're still talking about this at this late time. The phone number is area code 312-751-1979, and we're told we're going to take a quick break, but we want your contributions and your input as to what your perception is and is happening in Springfield. You've heard Zach outline some of the dynamics of the problem, which is perhaps the governor's insistence on a health care package. How does that relate to the other competing aspects of what's going on in Springfield? And we'll also talk a little bit about some of the accomplishments that we've been able to achieve, we think, when we get back after this brief message.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My son is in the number. The student-teacher ratio is 18 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools to learn more about the great benefits of a Catholic education. Invest in your child's future. Make your child a winner for life.
This is Bob Gilligan with the Catholic Conference of Illinois, and we're talking about public policy issues from Springfield. You're listening to the Catholic Conference Radio Hour on Relevant Radio, 820 AM. And it's time to reach out and respond, and that's the theme of this week's Relevant Radio's August Pledge Drive that's going on all this week. If you call 1-877-291-0123 or go online at relevantradio.com to make a donation. All major credit cards are accepted and all donations are tax deductible. Please support programs like this by making a donation to Relevant Radio. Call 1-877-291-0123 or go online at relevantradio.com. We're back to our conversation. We're talking earlier with Zach Wickman from the Catholic Conference, who's in Springfield, and who has spent, as I have, the better part of our summer in Springfield tracking this very exciting legislative session. We're talking before about the break about perhaps why, given some reasons why this legislation is dragged on till August 20th, and we're looking for your theories and input at 312-751-1979. And Zach, before we continue with that conversation, we should probably talk a little bit about, not only have we talked about health care, but the other major public policy dilemma facing lawmakers in Springfield this year was what to do to fund education. And at the beginning of the session, we saw a lot of fanfare and a lot of proposals, and maybe we should talk a little bit about what is now the compromise, if you will, as it relates to education, and also what we were able to do for the non-public school students as well as public school.
Well, sure. In education, you know, the compromise, I guess, as it is, was $600 million new dollars into education this year. And I think it's a funny thing, and I think part of, you know, the root problem with our budget system, whereas that's viewed as not enough, $600 million new dollars, $8.5 billion total just from the state to the public education system, and that's not enough. That's somehow, in the eyes of at least the public school advocates, a failure. I think that's an interesting viewpoint that deserves more scrutiny, but unfortunately doesn't get it because, you know, everyone runs on more dollars for education. We need to spend more on education, and nobody ever asks, well, what are we spending this on? Anyway, a little off track. What we were able to do for non-public schools is get, hopefully, $38 million new into programs that non-public schools can access. Two of these have been around for a long time. The transportation reimbursement for parents. That's for parents who live more than a mile and a half from the school. their children attend and then drive them themselves. They can be reimbursed for that. It's typically been about $140 a year. We're going to hopefully double that line item, make it about $280 a year. And, you know, that would, I hope, come close to matching the gasoline costs for most parents. The next one, textbook loan program. This is a program that both public and private schools can access. It loans textbooks, new textbooks, and provides a per-pupil allotment to do that. Right now, it goes on a three-year cycle. It serves like K through 4, 5 through 8, and 9 through 12. We were able to add about $11 million to that to cut the cycle to a two-year cycle. So the per-pupil allotment won't go up, but instead of waiting for every third year, kids in a certain grade can get new textbooks every other year. And then the last one, which is the most exciting to me and something that hasn't been done before, is we were able to open up the Educational Improvement and School Safety Block Grant to non-public schools. It's an existing block grant that right now public schools can access to fund things like background checks, school safety mandates. They can pay for school safety mandates, whether that's an AED or a fire alarm system or something like that. And it's another per-pupil allotment. And we were able to add in the budget $10.1 million to that and open it to non-public schools. So non-public schools should be getting, you know, if you got a Catholic school with 200 kids in it, you should hopefully get around $8,000 a year to pay for background checks, school safety mandates, textbooks, things like that. So that's real exciting. But, of course, all of that is contingent on the governor not vetoing any of it in the budget. And, you know, we don't have any insurances that way.
So currently what we have is a budget that has approximately $600 million more dollars for public school education. We have a budget that has an additional $38 million for non-public. And that we are extremely happy with, even though 38 compared to 600 obviously is not exactly comparing apples to apples, but nonetheless, we're very happy with that. And if that can continue through the budget, we would be grateful. But as you indicated, right now, that's in the budget. That budget goes to the governor. It has gone to the governor, I believe. And now it's up to the Governor Blagojevich to make a decision as to what should be funded and what should not be funded. And as he had indicated last week, he's been talking about the possibility of doing line item vetoes or mandatorily vetoing the budget, which would create an obligation on behalf of the General Assembly to do something. So with that said, we have now somewhat of a solution on health care. If the governor is happy with what he's proposing, we have somewhat of a solution on education. And then the third thing we hear about often in the press is this whole issue of pork spending. And what does that mean? How does that relate to the previous two topics that we were talking about?
Well, you know, this is the kind of thing that makes people cynical about politics, I think. But what happens is, in the budget process, often representatives or senators who are willing to vote for the budget will be allotted a certain dollar figure that they call member initiative money. That's money to go back to your district and spend on projects of that representative's choice. That's what the mainstream media calls pork. Now, there's two different views on that. I mean, a lot of people will say that is an abuse of taxpayer spending. It's not a specific appropriation that the government has laid out. And it's a, you know, the real cynic would say that's some kind of bribe to fund, you know, to get people to vote for the budget. I tend to take the other view, which is this money is often spent for very good projects. I mean, whether it's repairs on a bridge or building a new school or something like that, you know, I think there's a solid argument that can be made for a representative or senator might know how to spend that money in the district better than, you know, the entire group of them in Springfield. So there's two ways to look at it, and certainly there's examples on both sides of how this is abused and how it's used to a good end.
Mm-hmm.
But that money is in there, and the governor seems to be intent on taking it out.
And going through the list of member initiatives, or pork, as the depending on who you are will describe it, it is interesting to see how many smaller projects are being earmarked for Catholic schools, for Catholic social service agencies like Maryville. There's a number of different initiatives in there that are prescribed that are go-to that would help benefit what we do, as you described, for a new track and field assistance or for to repair a a gem. And for those secular purposes, there is a considerable amount of money in there that would go towards, that would do a lot of good. So like you said, it sort of depends on what perspective you sit on. We've seen examples of where that has been violated. I think the most famous or infamous is the Jack Benny statue in Waukegan. And we've also seen examples where it's done a lot of good for a lot of people. So now we have a situation where the pork spending or the member initiative money is still on the table in terms of what the governor may or may not do. We have the education issue, and we have health care all still sitting out there waiting for the governor's decision. There was also a supplemental appropriation that was passed recently that included legislative pay raise. There was a story in today's newspaper about the governor indicating that he has made statements indicating that he would not sign pay raises, but last week, late in the week, he did so. And it looks like right now that that supplemental appropriation will probably stand.
Yeah, I mean, it became law, so they're going to get their raises. And even more interesting, in the next budget, there's another raise in there for legislators. So
right.
I think I read in the paper the legislators stand to make something like a 13% raise in pay this year.
Exactly. We have a phone caller on the line. We have, I believe it's Teresa from Round Lake. Teresa, you're on the air. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have sort of a two-part question. The first main concern is the content of the textbook that the state supplies. I know my nephew had several textbooks that were supplied by the state in his Catholic school, and in the English book, you know, I flipped through it. There was, like, quotes by Gloria Steinem, and then I also flipped through a grade school book in the public schools once that... you know, it was a history book of the Middle Ages, and, you know, it made Islam look so wonderful. I would rather be Islamic than Catholic, and it made the Catholics look just evil, and they even had some incorrect teachings, you know, about Catholic indulgences, and it's all very subtle in there, but I'm just very concerned about Catholic schools using state-run, state-supplied books, and I understand it's, you know, it's a lot cheaper that way, but still, you know, it's something I think really needs to be watched. And also on an, I guess, an economic level, I know the school in this town, someone who works there, one of the employees told us that they just have a whole big almost warehouse full of computers and books they just throw out every single year. And it seems to me if, you know, they keep wanting more and more tax money, they ought to be a little more... you know, conscientious of that and not throw stuff out so often.
This is at the public school or the Catholic
school? Right. Well, yeah, this is at he works at the Ground Lake Public Schools, and he said they have just rooms and rooms of books that are in perfectly good condition and computers that for some reason are being thrown out. And I just wish, you know, schools would be more accountable for the items they throw out. And I don't know why books can't be reused for 10 or 15 years,
sure,
you know,
sure,
with the possible exception of a couple, books.
Forgetting
I don't know
that.
Why.
Right.
Okay.
Teresa,
thanks
for your phone call. And what we're going to do right now is, Zach, before we address that, we're going to have to take a quick break. Teresa, thanks for making your phone call. And if others are interested in making a phone call, the number is 312-751-1979. And we'll respond to that question when we have a chance to do so after this brief break.
You're invited to watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
Coming up during the next half hour, a conversation with Cardinal George about his health, about his visits to parishes of the Archdiocese of Chicago, all of them, and about recent comments from the Vatican about the Latin Mass and the identity of the Catholic Church. We'll also take you to several archdiocesan events, from the dedication of a shrine to those who protect us to the annual celebration called Noche de Gala. Welcome to The Church, the Cardinal, and You.
For for several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You, compelling television about your Archdiocese.
Since its founding in 1999, the Bishop Abramowicz Seminary program has prepared 18 men from Poland to serve as priests here in the Archdiocese of Chicago. There are many more priests on the way thanks to this unique ministry. Hello, I'm Father Rich Kleibor, rector of the Bishop Abramowicz Seminary, inviting you to attend our seminary's annual benefit banquet, this year honoring Cardinal George on his 10th anniversary as Archbishop of Chicago. The banquet will be held Sunday, September 9th, at the Chicago Marriott downtown. A silent auction and cocktails begin at 5 p.m., with dinner at 6 p.m. Call 312-666-3675 for more information and to book your tickets. That's 312-666-3675. Thanks for supporting the Bishop Abramowicz Seminary Program. Dziękuję bardzo. Bóg zapłać.
This is Bob Gilligan with the Catholic Conference, back here on our program this morning discussing some of the issues coming from Springfield. You're listening to the Catholic Conference Radio Hour, one of the many local Catholic programs coming your way from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday on Relevant Radio, AM 820. Your support of Relevant Radio is a direct way of participating in what Pope John Paul II defined as new evangelization. Call 1-877-291-0123 or go online at relevantradio.com to make a deduction. All major credit cards are accepted. All donations are tax deductible. This is the one place on the Chicago radio dial where your show hosts are discussing catechesis, family ministry, pro-life legislation, and matters of social justice. Please support programs like this by making a donation to Relevant Radio. Call 1-877-291-0123 or go online at relevantradio.com. Before the break, we were talking to Teresa from Round Lake, I believe that's where she was from, and she was asking questions about textbooks and the selection of them, and also about the allegation of a public school having a number of books and computers that are not being used. Zach, do you want to make a comment at all, or?
Sure. I mean, I think she brought up some good points in regards to the story about the public school district. I mean, without addressing, you know, the veracity of that, I think it makes a stark point about what I was trying to say maybe too subtly earlier, and that is how much money the state continually spends on public education, which is appropriate, but then that every year there are hundreds of millions of new dollars, and it's viewed as not enough. And nobody seems to ask the question, well, how are we spending the money? And I think if you talk to legislators, or particularly legislative staff off the record, they're very clear in that they feel trapped, that they have to spend this money, that they have to run on more spending for education, and yet they're not able to really ask and discern, you know, is it all being spent the way it should be?
Exactly.
On the textbook part, that's a very important point. The way the textbook loan program works is a Catholic school doesn't receive a check. It receives an allotment of money based on its enrollment that it then directs to textbook loans, and they have to pick those textbooks off an approved list. Now, none of those are religious textbooks. They're all secular. But she makes a very important point. A lot of textbooks, particularly history textbooks, can be really bad. And it's really up to the administrator of the school and the teachers of the school to evaluate those textbooks and make sure what they get is appropriate for their school.
Thanks, and that's a very good point to bring up. Teresa, thanks for your question. I think we have another caller on the line who doesn't want to give her name, but wants to echo a sentiment that I think many of us feel, if I understand it correctly. Caller, go ahead. You're on the air.
This is really a call to compliment Relevant Radio for this type of program that you have on today. I think we Catholics tend to observe, be very faithful Catholics in practice, but we slip up sometimes in following civic affairs, and you know, just as an instance, maybe ask a friend or relative about something that's going on in the legislature, and that person may not know what I'm talking about. And not that I'm that filled in myself, but I think that's part of your should be part of your life to take an interest in world affairs, state affairs, city affairs. I mean, it's important to go to church and be a good, faithful Catholic, but I think that should be part of your life to know it, because in the end, you're really helping your fellow man. And I mentioned too when I called in that the word politician is kind of used negatively. I rather refer to them as public servants, and I think we should all take more interest in what's going on. And I remember many years ago reading a book by Father Keller, You Can Change the World. And sometimes one person can write a letter or make a telephone call and do some little thing. I mean, it's important to go to church and all that, but I think you have to sacrifice your time for other affairs. But that's my compliment to Relevant Radio, and I hope you have more types of this program where we are being educated on what's going on in our state, and I would like to, to a certain extent, have more of it and educate us and tell us what we as citizens should be doing.
Caller,
as good Catholics.
Good. Well, thanks so much for your contribution this morning, and that's what we try to do. And I think it's phone calls like yours and actions like yours that keep myself and Zach and others going, because it is difficult, not only from our perspective on bringing our Catholic values to the public forum where decisions are made, that's not an easy thing to do sometimes, but also I think for many public officials, as you call them, I think they need some support too. It's not an easy job, and I think Zach and I both come across many public servants who are good people. They're good, solid people. They're grasping with issues. They're trying to make decisions in the best way possible. And many of them do reflect on their Catholic faith. Obviously, we wish more of them would, but there are some very good people out there. And, for example, I will hearken back to a previous subject that Zach was mentioning, that $38 million that we tentatively have in the budget for our Catholic schools. The reason we were able to do that is because we appealed to some members of the General Assembly who are willing to go to bat for us and make it really happen. And as a matter of fact, today's guest was going to be one of those legislators that was one of the architects of that securing that funding, but unfortunately he couldn't make it this morning and had a last-minute cancellation, and you're absolutely right. Zach, do you want to make a comment?
No, I agree entirely with what the caller said, and I think, if more people paid attention and were involved in the political process,
right.
I don't know if the policies would be different, but I do know the process would be different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the process of how, our budget is made in this state is, I hate to use too strong a word, but it's shameful in some sense. I mean, most people don't know what they're voting on when they vote on it. And then when they do, and when 118 state reps and 58 state senators pass a budget, one man with the agreement of one other man can foil a great percentage of that effort, and that's, I think, problematic.
I agree, and that's a great transition that we're going to make at the next segment when we talk about the decision-making process in Springfield. That's what I want to tackle at the next portion of the show. We've gone over the issues, per se, in the health care, the education, and the member initiative money. There are many other issues out there in the budget that we could discuss, but I also want to talk a little bit on the second half of our program about decision-making and how it's been going on and how it could be improved, and the phone caller earlier shed some light on our obligation to become more informed of those issues. This is Bob Gilligan. I'm with the Catholic Conference of Illinois. I'm on the line this morning with Zach Whitman talking about the never-ending state budget drama unfolding in Springfield. The phone number is area code 312-751-1979, and we'll be right back after this message.
Are you an active volunteer in your parish? Do you want to grow spiritually and deepen your faith and prayer life? Do you want to know more about the Bible, church doctrine and history, and about sacraments and liturgy? The Archdiocese of Chicago offers the Called and Gifted program for generous people like you. Through weekly classes and monthly formation days, Called and Gifted helps parish volunteers become more effective parish ministers. You'll study at a site near you, forming friendships and deepening your faith. And each month, you'll attend a formation day of prayer and learning at a retreat center of stunning beauty. Over 1,500 volunteer ministers have found greater confidence for ministry through the Called and Gifted program. For more information about this wonderful opportunity for growth, call Sister Peg at 847-837-4555 or email layministry@usml.edu. Don't put it off. Call today.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 820 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio, 820 a.m. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
This is Bob Gilligan, and welcome back to our show this morning on a very steamy, hot morning here in rainy Chicago. It's 9:34, coming up on 9:35 a.m. on Monday morning. We're talking about some of the public policy issues in the state budget as it pertains to Springfield. The number is 312-751-1979. And just a reminder that you're listening to the Catholic Conference Radio Hour on Relevant Radio 820 a.m., and it's time to reach out and respond. That's the theme of Relevant Radio's August Pledge Drive that's going on all this week. Call 1-877-291-0123 or go online at relevantradio.com to make a donation. All major credit cards are accepted, and all donations are tax-deductible. Please support programs like this by making a donation to Relevant Radio. Call 1-877-291-0123 or go online at relevantradio.com. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about the decision-making process in Springfield, or perhaps the lack thereof, and I think it was called shameful at one point in time, and I think many people who are observers of the process would agree with that analysis. It seems as time has gone on that decision-making is in a smaller number of hands. This year, I think we saw two opportunities, that's not the best word, but we saw a period of time when there were just three individuals who were involved with the decision-making process: the Speaker of the House, the President of the Senate, and the Governor, and then it expanded to five after it was needed a three-fifths majority. And it seems like there's just far too few people involved in the decision-making process down in Springfield, and perhaps that's one of the reasons why we're still sitting here on August 20th without a state budget. Zach, the other players involved, the Republicans, Tom Cross, the minority leader, and the minority leader of the Senate's Frank Watson, I think they still grasp, because of their insufficient numbers, to be a substantial part of the process, but it seems for a while that they were. Did that help things or hurt things, or do you think there was really no effect in the end?
Well, it should help things, and I suppose it did. I mean, you know, the Republicans were staunchly opposed to some ideas that the governor had, and there wasn't any chance they were going to budge on them. So I think once they went past the May 31st deadline, which means they no longer need just a bare majority, but a three-fifths majority to pass any legislation that goes into effect this year, the Republicans became very relevant, and I think that helped the process in that certain things were just taken off the table. GRT, the full-blown universal health care plan, GRT, I'm sorry, is the gross receipts tax. Those things were off the table once the Republicans came on board. And, you know, I do think it is sometimes too simple and maybe wrong to say it's just five people, because, you know, they still have to get the members of their caucus to vote for it. But, you know, I think you can't argue that those five people have too much power.
Exactly. Any prognosis on the whole issue of gaming? That was one thing that continues to come up from time to time. There were many proposals about gaming earlier in the session. I think one included is adding as many as five additional gaming venues across the state, some of them in Chicago. That proposal did not pass, but yet at the end, gaming was still alive for the city of Chicago. It is tied to the possibility that those revenues could be used for a capital program, and I think you often hear that issue surface from time to time. Any idea whether gaming comes back, and if so, in what form?
Well, you know, I've only been working in the legislature for 5 years, but every one of those years there is a gambling proposal that's on the table for the budget at the end of the year. And every one of those years, it just became so bloated, unwieldy, it died its own death. And I think that's likely here, too. The mayor doesn't seem to be supportive of the Chicago casino as it's currently drafted in statute. And I don't know how the legislature could pass a casino for Chicago if the mayor's not for it. So I think it's unlikely. But I do think there are more and more legislators willing to vote for gambling expansion. And, you know, that troubles me personally, not just because of the nature of some of these casinos, but when you're starting to fund basic services, education, healthcare, and other things, based on gambling revenue, I think you got to question what you're doing there.
Exactly, and I think you see those issues from time to time, and I think it's also a function of greed, whereas when these gaming proposals surface, they do have actually a significant amount of support, but what happens as they go through the legislative process, they get they're expanded upon. There's also the dynamic in Illinois with the horse racing industry.
Sure.
That has a different dynamic to it. Then you also seem to increase it, and eventually what seems to happen every single year, as you indicated, is that it seems to sink under its own weight. And yet they continue to surface the proposals, there's nothing that's over in Springfield yet, this one could come back to fund a capital program.
Oh, sure. I think gambling will be on the table from now until, you know, as far in the future as I can see, even if they were to pass gambling expansion. I mean, it's just the mm-hmm. money there is just too easy for the government to stay away from.
And the money is significant in terms
yes.
of the dollars that it brings in. And I think people thought that the lottery brought in a lot of money. That is, there is hardly any money at all being generated by the Illinois lotteries compared to what major gaming expansion could bring into the state's coffers.
Right.
We're talking about public policy issues in Springfield. We're going to take a quick break here at 9:40 a.m. in Chicago. The phone number is area code 312-751-1. 1979. We've talked a little bit about the healthcare expansion proposal that the governor has proposed, a little bit about the education funding, a little bit about pork initiatives and decision-making process in Springfield or lack thereof. We're going to talk a little bit more about gaming and what that brings, and we join our conversation in about 1 minute.
The cemetery ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. Cardinal George says, "It's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection." There are 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries willing to help you during times of loss. Call 708-449-6100 for assistance. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
Do you know what's going on in your church around the corner or around the world? Do you want to hear stories about your faith? Do you want to help shape Catholic thought? If you said yes, subscribe to the Catholic New World, the newspaper for the people of the Archdiocese of Chicago. Call 312-655-7777 or visit us at catholicnewworld.com. The Catholic New World, a world beyond your church, a church beyond your world.
Hi, I'm Chuck Knapp. Join me for Searching the Word, a live interactive program that equips you with a firm understanding of the faith. Each day, we'll search the Bible, the Catechism, papal teaching, and historical writings for answers to questions about living Catholic life. That's Searching the Word every weekday on Relevant Radio.
That's Searching the Word with Chuck Knapp. Weekdays at noon on Chicagoland's Relevant Radio, 820 AM.
This is Bob Gilligan with the Catholic Conference of Illinois. You're listening to the Catholic Conference Radio Hour, one of the many local Catholic programs coming your way from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday on Relevant Radio, AM 820. Your support of Relevant Radio is a direct way of participating in what John Paul II defined as new evangelization. Call 1-877-291-0123 or go online at relevantradio.com to make a donation. All major credit cards are accepted. All donations are tax deductible. This is the one place on the Chicago radio dial where your show hosts are discussing catechesis, family ministry, pro-life legislation, and matters of social justice. Please support programs like this by making a donation to Relevant Radio. Call 1-877-291-0123. 1-800-273-0123 or go online at relevantradio.com. I feel like I'm giving a lot of phone numbers here this morning for the Relevant Radio Drive, and also the phone number to join our conversation here is 312-751-1979. And we have another caller on the line. I believe it's Kathy from Joliet. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure if I have all the information that I should for this comment, but...
That's okay. We'll try to help you out.
Thank you. It's probably been a year or so, but the state voted on public funding of stem cell research for Illinois, and it was voted out the way I understood. And then part of it, though, I guess, was based on that they didn't think they had enough money. And then later on the side, members of the
legislature,
body, right?
Mm-hmm.
They, together with the governor, decided that they did have enough money, and then suddenly it was just legal, and that rather than go back and re-vote on it. That's the way I understood it, and to me that ties in with the problem with the way things, with the procedures, the way the budget is decided. Is that really what happened?
You're very close, Kathy. You get an A. You're really close. Zach, you want to fill in the details, but
sure.
you got the overall concept pretty close. Zach,
sure.
Go ahead. You want to fill in?
Yeah,
the details?
Sure. It's kind of a complex issue, but
it's very complex.
The basics are stem cell research has never been illegal in Illinois. State statute was silent on the matter. It wasn't banned. It wasn't supported. Whatever. About 4 years ago, there was legislation introduced in the Senate that would have provided state sanction to stem cell research and what they call therapeutic human cloning, that is human cloning to support stem cell research. And that would have been a vehicle to state funding to stem cell research. Now, we fought that long and hard. Boy, Bob and I have a lot of great stories about that. And we defeated it for the first 3 years. Now, this year, mostly due to the elections last November, the Senate, where we had stopped the bill for several years, experienced a major turnaround. And they were able to pass it. So they passed the legislation that provided state sanction for stem cell research. There was no funding in that bill. Now, what has happened the past several years is the governor has used his authority to transfer administrative funds in the budget to fund stem cell research at low amounts. I think it was $5 million the first year, $10 million last year. I would expect he'll do the same thing this year. He didn't pass any funding in the budget for it. We made sure of that. And we have opposed it from the get-go, but you know he's able to use his executive authority to send some money, small amounts of money, relatively small amounts of money, to stem cell research. The really ironic thing about this is most of that money goes to stem cell research that we support. That is adult stem cell research. We're all for that. We think it's great. It's really helping people.
Oh, great.
But unfortunately, he is able to send some money using his executive authority, not through the legislative process, for embryonic stem cell research. And that's something we continue to oppose.
Kathy, thanks for your question, because I think what you've hit on is the exact nature of part of the problem here is when we saw the governor take those actions on stem cell research, he was using his executive authority to transfer money in among line items. What he was doing there was technically legal, although it was not very common, but it is technically legal. What he's now proposing to do in terms of the reducing the line items as it relates to member initiatives or pork spending and transfer that towards health care expenditures in the amount of $500 million, many believe is unconstitutional. But I think it is somewhat interesting that the same thing that we've experienced a number of different times with gubernatorial executive orders is now what the public at large is experiencing with his attempt to fund the health care program that he was unable to get through the General Assembly.
Oh, right. Well, and, you know, even though whether it's good or bad, if he put all that money toward adult stem cell research, it would be great. But the trouble is, when you were talking about health care, I thought, I wonder if he's going to try to get all the money to go toward it because he wants to support the companies that want embryonic stem cell research. So I don't know. Anyway, Well,
time will tell with that. Time will tell, and I think Zach makes a good point in that at least through the legislative process, which is really the only mechanism and the means by which we have a chance to influence the decision that's made, we've been very successful, along with other advocacy groups, in persuading members that embryonic may not be the way to go and to only fund adult at this point in time. Unfortunately, as Zach indicates, I think through the legislation this year, the mechanism is in place to fund embryonic, although they've been unable to do so far to date. Does that help?
It does.
Good.
Thank you for your work.
Oh, thank you for your phone call, too, and thank you for your interest. And please continue to follow us through the website and through the other announcements that we make. I've been told that we have to make another brief message here for about a minute or so. We have about 10 minutes. It's 9:49 a.m. here in Chicago. This is Bob Gilligan. I'm with Zach Wickman. We're talking about public policy issues affecting us in Springfield, mostly pertaining to the state budget. The phone number, if you want to get in one more quick phone call or two, is 312-751-1979.
To serve the church as a lay parish minister? Do you possess the gifts and passion for full-time church ministry? Today, lay women and men are being called to join clergy and religious and serve the church as pastoral associates and directors of religious education. Perhaps you are one of those people. To serve, you need spiritual formation and academic training. And the Archdiocesan Together in God Service program provides you both. Qualified candidates receive partial tuition scholarships and pursue a master's degree in ministry at one of Chicago's Catholic theological schools. But Together in God's Service also provides retreats and prayer experiences to help you grow spiritually and deepen your love of God. If you want to explore a calling to lay ecclesial ministry, talk to your pastor and talk to us by calling 847-837-4552. Or send an email to layministry@usml.edu.
Welcome to Mission Chicago 2007 as we celebrate the theme of spirituality. Evening missions are taking place throughout the Archdiocese in both English and Spanish. Spirituality themes include the meaning of being created in the image and likeness of God, exploring our potential for growth in Christ, and the spirituality of African-American music and song. These are single evening missions, and there is no cost. Find out when and where by going to www.missionchicago.net. That's www.missionchicago.net. It's Mission Chicago 2007, the year of spirituality. Accept this mission. The rewards are everlasting.
Okay, this is Bob Gilligan. We're back for the final couple minutes of our show today, talking about what's been happening in Springfield. It's still going on August 20th, and we'll probably be going for another couple more weeks. Zach, where do we go from here? It's the 20th of August. We'll probably be, at some point in time, the governor's going to release the line item vetoes, I suppose. He was supposed to do that Friday. To the best of our knowledge, he did not. And then from there, what happens after that?
Well, I good question. I mean, I don't think there's any way to know for sure, but the plan, I believe, is that the House, Speaker Madigan has said he will bring the House back in and he will override the vetoes. Now, the vetoes don't really get overridden unless both houses override them. The Senate President has said he won't override them. So, in some sense, I think that will be a meaningful gesture, but not a conclusive gesture of the House overriding the governor's veto. Once the governor vetoes it, we'll have an operating budget. It won't be what anybody wanted, I don't think, but it'll be an operating budget so the state will be able to send out checks. But it doesn't really solve any of the problems. You know, what it does is extend them. You know, the governor can talk all he wants about this health care plan he's going to make by rules, but he, in all reality, he can't veto money and then spend it in some other line item. He knows
right. That.
So he doesn't really address the health care issue. I mean, he might do some things around the edges, but it's not what he wanted. And the legislature won't have done what they wanted, especially after all the vetoes. So I don't know what's going to happen, you know. I think what we're looking at is, or at least possible, some kind of, you know, year-long session where they just fight this out and fight this out. And, boy, I don't know how they're ever going to work together next year on the budget, because there have been so many.
Lots of distrust.
Yeah, a lot of deception, really. I mean, there's no other way to put it. People who said they'd do one thing and then haven't done it. So I don't know where it goes from here, but it's not going to be fun, I don't think.
No, and then we're dangerously close to the veto session. This will go probably another week or two. It'll be in September. Then generally we go back to the veto session, which is the opportunity for the General Assembly to act on what the governor has done in terms of signing bills or mandatorily veto them. And one of the things that really hasn't been reported on very widely is he has signed very few pieces of legislation. Very few have signed. And he seems like they're signing a little bit more now, but recently he just signed a few. But up until a couple days ago, there were hardly any signed. So how that's going to play out also will be the subject of probably a lot of angst and concern, as a lot of those pieces of legislation are very important to particular interest groups, whoever may have tried to enact them. And we have a bill or two that's up there as well waiting to be signed.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, you're right. He hasn't signed any bills during this impasse. He started, you know, last week signing more. So we'll just have to keep an eye on it. If he doesn't sign a bill, after 60 days, it becomes law. So, you know, I don't know if he's just going to let a lot become law without a signature or what, but we'll see.
And in my conversations with some of the hospitals last week and the social service agencies, there's a widespread degree of concern about the governor not signing that budget, and to the degree that he does not sign it, will delay payments to those authorities that contract with the state. We've seen lawsuits settled that enable state employees to be paid, but it is still an unanswered question as to what the state's obligation is to pay the social service agency and the Medicaid providers without an operating budget if the governor has not signed it.
Right. I think the governor will have to do whatever he's going to do with the budget early this week, because there are people who are not getting paid, and I don't know. I mean, we're a month and a half into the new fiscal year, so I don't know how long he can let this languish.
Actually, and the other point I should bring up before we close out here is I had mentioned earlier about the textbook and transportation funding, or the additional funding for textbook and transportation in addition to that school safety program. And I should say that it was Speaker Madigan and many members of the House and Senate who led the charge on trying to get that funded. And we also have a letter that was signed by 20-some-odd members, and I know there were many others who were willing to sign it who just didn't, for whatever reason. We had to get it sent to the governor back in May, expressing a desire to do what they could for non-public schools. So as that one caller indicated, there are a lot of good lawmakers out there, public servants, who are trying to do what they can to help out. They realize there's a problem not only in the arena of public school funding, but in the arena of non-public school funding as well. And the other thing to mention, too, before we close, is we're not alone in these efforts. We've had some substantial help by some partners with non-public school funding. Agudath Israel, which is an advocacy organization pertaining to some of the issues affecting the Jewish faith, has been very instrumental in trying to move this agenda along since really the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's right. It's a lot of work by a lot of people. And, you know, I just want to stop by saying a lot of people can listen to this and become very cynical about politics and just throw their hands up and say, I can't do anything. And I think that's what's led us to where we are. Politics can be a dirty business. Boy, there's very few that's as important. I mean, it really does structure our society in a lot of ways, and I think people need to be as engaged as they can be and try to make a difference.
Okay, on that note, we should begin to sign off. And thanks for joining us this morning for a good conversation. And thanks for all those individuals who took the time to call us and register their opinions on what's going on in Springfield. We'll be back during the third Monday of the month of September. And as I concluded the monthly program in July by saying I thought that we would be off the air, we thought we would be done in Springfield for the next program in August, which obviously we didn't succeed. So maybe we'll succeed sometime in the month of September, and we won't be still going down the Springfield as much as we have been over the last month or two. Once again, I'd like to remind all the listeners out there that they can support programs like this one by making a donation to Relevant Radio. Please call 1-877-291-0123 or go online at relevantradio.com. This is Bob Gilligan, and thanks for listening. And we'll be back during the third Monday of September for our next program on public policy issues. Thanks for listening, everybody.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 820 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day, and God bless you.